No.
Let's go ahead and bring House Resources to order. Today is April 6th. It's 4:15 p.m. Members present are Vice Chair Jacko, Representative Navarre, Hudson Sharp. We've adjusted our schedule today due to the long time on the floor, so we are going to hold over House Bill 55, which is the Oil and Gas Commission. And the bill we are going to take up is House Bill 205, Forest Stewardship Agreement. And here to testify, starting off on the testify, we have Bob Loshi for Red Corps, which is a economic development group in my district, and I've worked with them to introduce this legislation. So Bob, if you'd like to come forward.
Hey. See everybody, Don, see a little
Bob.
Sign here.
Don, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Bob, Dan. Yeah. She writes to him. The staff wrote Bob. How did I get Bob here? I guess we'll switch that to Don. I'll blame them on you, Bob. She's got Bob Loshi and Don Dick. We're just going to go. It was a long day here today. And now you know how us legislators operate. So, Don?
Okay, are we on?
Yes.
Okay.
Give us your name and address.
Yep, my name is Don Loshi. I live at mile 51 on the Parks Highway near Big Lake. I work in the sport fishing live business. I have also worked and lived in the Great Boreal Forest of Alaska for over 40 years. I'm here before you to discuss the merits of House Bill 205 and try to prove that the bill needs to be passed into law this session. The subjects I will briefly address are the dying boreal forest, the rail belt economy, the forest industry potential, the risk of a single base economy, value-added products, the archaic practices of the forest department.
My God, remember.
And what is merchantable timber? I was not able to bring my library with me, but I believe I have sufficient data to prove my point. The Tongass and the state forest at Haines, or the Haines management area, will not be on my subject list because they are not a true boreal forest, but a northern extension of the southern forest made possible by the warm Japanese current that supplies the warm air to cause them to exist. One of our problems is that these two forests always get confused. You know, and there's absolutely no relation to them whatsoever. The subject will be the Great Boreal Forest of the Susitna Valley, Copper Center, and the Great Interior. The hundreds and hundreds of millions of board feet, or cubic feet as you may prefer, are virtually unmeasurable. Any figure you choose to use will probably be conservative. These forests are in a serious state of decay because they have not been harvested or managed. The only management has been by Mother Nature in the form of fires. I believe that Forester David Orr presented you with facts on the beetle kill throughout Alaska. Dr. William Wood has given much data on the over-mature condition of our forest, the Great Taiga, as he refers to it. I have given similar information on March 11th in Wasilla. So do we all agree on these facts, or would someone like some more information on them? And are we all aware that these conditions exist?
You're talking about the spruce bark beetle?
The spruce bark beetle and the over-maturity of the forest and the fact that it's never been managed by other than fire. We all together on that one?
Well, I would say that, I don't know what the committee members have to say. We did a presentation of the spruce bark beetle by Mr. Orr,
uh-huh.
or Dr. Orr, I don't know if he was a doctor. And then we, the testimony that I'm aware of from our director of forestry and stuff, we have not had the resources to manage our forest as good or as proper as we could have, for sure. And there are some areas, I would assure, that there is some over-maturity. Certainly they're not the ones that we've just cut, but
no.
there are some
well,
areas.
Yeah, and I'm sure
we get nervous when we all start talking about agreement down here.
Yeah.
That's kind of a buzzword right there.
Right.
matter of fact, we still don't have them.
Hey, Don, it's kind of like, trust me. kind of gets us a little bit.
Right, most generally, when the Department of Forestry refers to the management in the forest, whether it be adequate or inadequate, they're talking about, in the boreal forest, they're talking about the Tanawha State Forest. They're not talking about the millions of acres of forest that are not in any way managed by anything other than fire. Okay, so we'll go ahead on that. Okay, the real built economy from Anchorage to Fairbanks and on to the Canadian border is also a serious economic disaster that I'm sure you're all aware of. So I'm not going to say do we agree on that. Does everybody understand that? We've had lots of testimony on it. The forest industry potential is great. We have the known markets. We have the resource, well inventoried and identified. We have the available manpower. However, we do not have in Alaska the technology or the capital to put this technology to work. We can't build pulp mills, the plywood plants, weasel wood plants, or any of the other plants necessary to put our resource on the market. Round log export cannot achieve anything in the boreal forest because it causes 70% waste and exports jobs to other countries. Everything that is cut in Alaska must be shipped in a value-added form. This is the only way that we can utilize the resource and the manpower to a maximum. I'm sure that when you all see a lumber yard full of dimensional lumber, you think of the timber industry. When you see a train load of logs going to the docks for export, you think of the timber industry. When the Department of Forestry talks to the forest industry, they say if the tree isn't 24 inches at the butt or 10 inches at the small end, it's not a tree. It's not merchantable. So this is what they think of when they think of the timber industry. This is archaic. How many of you think of timber industry when you use a toothpick or light a match, use chopsticks, play a guitar, put on a rayon shirt, or sit in a chair, or for that matter, review the papers before you or the paper that I'm reading from now, or get a little further on down the line and go to the bathroom? It's all timber industry.
Down to the basics.
Down to the basics. Now this is the timber industry that will save our boreal forest. It will take all of these industries knitted to each other to do the job, and the job is very big. Therefore, House Bill 205. We have just had a very big fact brought before us at Valdez. Here suddenly popped up Murphy's Law and the worst scenario all at once. However, because of the magnitude of it all, we were very, very lucky. It was a very clear warning to me that we had better do something to diversify our economy. Years ago, a worker dropped a crescent wrench on a steel floor and blew up a pump station. An activist tried to blow up the pipeline at Fox. Fortunately, he didn't know how and just made a big bang. Any one of these things, or a drunken or drugged worker, a fire or an earthquake, could bankrupt the state. We hang by a very fine thread over a very deep pit. We had better get more diversified and do so soon. The pipeline is already older than its original expected lifespan, of which originally was 10 years. So again, House Bill 205. According to Dr. Kim from the University of Alaska, has spoken to all of us on the subject of value-added products in both the fishing industry and the timber industry, to mention only two. We have already given our fishing industry away. Let's not do it to our forest industry. I would like to talk a bit on value-added products. Through long-term timber leases, as addressed in House Bill 205, our first value-added product is the resource itself. By using modern forest practice techniques, we will have an improved forest of higher yield and better quality product or value-added. Nursery, seeding farms, scarification, replanting, and thinning are also value-added. Improved game habitat, stream enhancement, aquaculture, recreation facilities, increased tourism, improved lifestyle, infrastructure, more wild berries, mushroom, game birds, moose, caribou, bear, and the list goes on and on. These are all value-added products. Under our current practices, none of these things can be achieved. At the present time, a black spruce tree is absolutely valueless. It's not pretty to look at. It is not desirable to use as firewood. It can't be used in round log export. It's just there, useless and unsightly. Black spruce mill in the Weasewood Mill is the most valuable wood in Alaska, bringing in $1,500 a thousand in the U.S. market and Pacific Rim. White birch is the most valuable plywood and one of the most valuable toy and cabinet stock materials. Clear white interior spruce is the most desirable wood in the world for acoustical instruments and therefore the most valuable. Ash and cottonwood brings the highest pulp price, not to mention the many side products, furniture, cabinet stock, and etc. These products can all be a reality and should be, but they never will be possible until we can provide long-term timber supplies to an investing product producer. No one is going to invest $300 or $400 million in Alaska if they can't see how they can amortize their investment over a 20-year period or longer. And this is a fact. It's the second cut from an enhanced forest that will make it all worthwhile. And that, gentlemen, is a value-added product. In reference to our archaic forest practices that I aforementioned, the DNR and the Department of Forestry still consider that timber sales are disposal of our resource instead of the enhancement and development of a resource. They still judge merchantable timber as having a 24-inch butt or a 10-inch small end. Because they believe that dimensional lumber is the only marketable product, the 2x4 syndrome, they still compare the Tongass to the Great Boreal Forest of the interior. They still use the Scribner Decimal C scales on most timber sales, which also supports the 2x4 syndrome. Other scales used are by the cord for firewood or cubic feet on junk wood for chips, of which we have no producing industry in the boreal forest supplies. We need to take a great step forward and traverse two centuries, and from the 21st century and beyond, with total utilization of forest enhancement and forest enhancement. Everything in the forest biomes must be enhanced by utilization. And that is what conservation is, House Bill 205. As far as the diversified economy is concerned, we can realize more dollars from a boreal forest than we can recover from the oil industry. The big difference is that in 100 years, we will have a better resource producing more in the Taiga, while the Alaska oil industry will be in the history books if the present production continues. Synthetic fuel will power our cars and heat our homes, and this synthetic fuel will be a byproduct of agriculture in the forest. This may all seem confusing, but the time has come to take our place in the world, now and in the future. The oil industry, the forest, and our people are telling us we must start now. Even next year could be too late. The object of House Bill 205 is not to dispose of a resource, but to develop and enhance our resource, along with enhancing wildlife and all other things in the forest biomes. This might sound like a dream, as Dr. Wood puts it, but it can be a reality. We can only look back to see what we have done and not make the mistakes of the past. Now, when I refer to Dr. Woods and his dream, I can remember several years ago that Dr. Woods and I just about had knockdown dragouts over timber sales. He and I both agreed that timber sales were the most destructive thing that was being done in Alaska, in the Tanadon Forest in the interior. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't get more sympathy out of him on timber sales until I found out what his dream was, and his dream was to rebuild the forest. Millions and millions of acres. David Orr, who's a scientist that studies the bug infestation and the overmaturity of our forest, says that 10 billion board feet of white spruce is dead or dying in the interior. The estimate of the timber industry, if properly developed, is a $6 billion a year industry in the boreal forest in the interior. I noticed coming down here on the airplane, you sail up in the boat, you know, coming up through the inlet, and you can see the great Tongass growing up on the side of the hill. You think, gee, what a terrific forest. You fly up there, and it's a little strip. It comes up like so, and up around through Haines, some places it down to just lying on the coast. In the interior of Alaska, in the boreal forest, you can fly an Cessna 180 full of fuel until it runs dry in a given direction and not run out of the boreal forest. It goes for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles in every direction. And it's a mixed forest. The spruce, birch, aspen, cottonwood, the Susitna Valley. And I think, Mr. Navari, that have you read David Orr's stuff? Uh-huh. It is a very big portion of the Kenai that is in a devastating situation that we can't harvest, we can't do anything about. We just got to sit back and watch these millions of dollars falling over every day and every hour. And it was brought up by somebody that knew you very well and says, I don't think Navarre's going to go for any forestry bill. And that's probably true, but you wouldn't have to have the pulp mill. We'd be glad to put the pulp mill in the Sault Ste. Sit in the valley and we could barge it over. We'd be more than glad to have that, but we'd sure like to have that old dead wood get over here and get some jobs going, get some economy going again. And then David Orr's material, I don't know if anybody wants any of this or he's probably already got some of it.
We got it when
you got it.
That brings it down. Now in the Susitna Valley, for instance, seems to be the most controversial place of all. There's been over 40 studies in the Susitna Valley. And every study that comes down the pike is less wood and less wood and less wood. And the people that do these studies, if they apparently the object is just to get less figures down, so they change the scale. Say, okay, we were going by 10-inch top last time and we got 1,200,000 feet and everybody was all interested in it. So we'll go to a 24-inch butt now and that'll get it down to where nobody will be interested in it. And this is what's happened to our timber in the Susitna Valley, and which caused the Forest Service to say, we have no viable timber industry in Alaska. It was the dedicated purpose of the Tanana State Forest to prove that there was no viable timber industry in Alaska. And that the way it's managed and the way it's operated, there can't be. Because nobody can invest in the equipment and the milling facilities that's necessary to do this. I sure wouldn't invest $5 million in a one-year, 1 million-foot sale, not knowing if I'm ever going to get another one. So what goes on is the forest industry is booming in Finland and the Scandinavian country. One very good friend of mine is a doctor, scientist, who has made his living in Alaska for a long time, and about 15 years ago says Alaska isn't going to do anything, so I'm leaving. And he went down in the Philippines, and he's got four stewardships started down there. He's gone down to some of the underdeveloped countries in South America, got stewardships started there. And in one country, they asked him to go over to East Germany to study their forest redevelopment situation and how they were doing it. So he went over to East Germany and worked with their forestry people for a couple of months. And one day, a German come up to him and says, why are you studying our forest? And he says, well, I'm sent over here to see your new forest reclamation system. And he says, oh, you don't want to go see us. Go to Finland. They've been doing it for 200 years. And the Finns, they do. They got it down pat. And that's where the technology lies to develop our forest, so we can have a perpetual cut, ever maintain maintenance of our forest, and get the industry in to stabilize our economy and give the jobs in the rail belt in the interior where we've always struggled from the boom and bust economy. Every time there's a construction job, everybody's busy, and then for the next 10 years, everybody struggles. And the only thing that will stabilize it, that there is to stabilize it, is the forest industry. And the only way that the forest industry can be developed is through a forest stewardship system. The problem with a forest stewardship system is by the time it gets to our commissioners, it's going to be tough to have a working bill survive. By the time everybody gets their piece put in it and gets it turned over, I'm sure that they'll come up with something a lot different than House Bill 205, but I don't know how to control the Department of Natural Resources or any of the other commissions, and that's always a problem. I'll admit that.
We call it fingerprints, Don.
Fingerprints.
Put our fingerprints on. That can change somewhere.
Okay. Does anybody have any more questions?
Are there questions? Representative Navarre.
I have some questions on the bill, but I'm going to first look at the oversight.
We have about four other people that are scheduled for
that's
fine.
That's fine.
Yes. Go ahead.
I was just going to make a comment about the guy that knows me well. But yeah, there's someone else, I'll probably give you a different opinion.
Well, it didn't upset me. It's like a forester when he tells me that there's no forest potential, you know, not enough to support a forest industry in this great forest, and I don't know whether it's their job does it state that they don't want to admit these things, or that they don't want to do anything about it, or what it is? But I know that there's no such thing as a forester that doesn't want to grow a forest. They couldn't go to school for 16 years and not want to grow a forest. It just isn't possible. Is that right, Bob?
I have from the Department of Commerce, Jerry Engel, the Department of Forestry, the Director, Bob Dick, and Department of Fish and Game, we have Frank Lou.
Okay, I'm enlisted those people.
Okay.
Questions.
Okay.
Now, okay, I went over the paperwork that was out there, and everything sounded pretty favorable on the side of the bill, except for DNR. DNR seems to be having a lot of trouble with it.
Well, let's let them testify.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Don. You betcha.
Appreciate you coming down.
Don't leave town.
No, I ain't gonna leave town.
Mr. Engel?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jerry Engel. I'm with the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Program Manager for Minerals and Forest Products. I submitted to the committee earlier written comments on 205. Rather than just read this as testimony, I would prefer to entertain any questions you might have on the remarks I submitted.
Read the testimony. We've been on the floor a little bit.
All right. It's a little lengthy. I'll try and make it as interesting as possible. The concept of devoting or dedicating a portion of forest land for the express purpose of intensive timber management is one that has proven successful in other areas of the world, most notably Canada and the Scandinavian countries. In Canada, the driving philosophy was one of settling large tracts of basically unpopulated land and providing a means by which people could exist on them. In the Scandinavian countries that Mr. Loshi referred to, the basis was a recognition of a finite resource base that demanded intensive management if it were to meet both the social and economic needs of the population. The success of these efforts rests largely on the determination of the government to make them work. While such approaches to forest industry development are criticized from some quarters, it can be said that these programs have succeeded in inducing the forest products industry to commit financially to infrastructure development, primarily in the form of manufacturing facilities, and that this commitment has resulted in an overall economic benefit to the respective areas. Additionally, in the Scandinavian experience, it has fostered and developed the most advanced silvicultural techniques employed in forest management, and a concomitant industry that develops and manufactures state-of-the-art timber harvesting and wood processing equipment. The thrust of this bill, 205, is consistent with the Governor's Memorandum of July 1988, wherein he calls for efforts to, quote, encourage the sale, long-term lease, for contractual management of state-owned forest land for the development of a forest products industry consistent with the public interest and multiple use concepts. It's important to note that while the timber industry in Southeast has enjoyed a healthy rebound in the last 2.5 years, the development of northern forests and South Central and the interior regions of the state have lagged behind. This may in some way reflect the general economic decline of the areas, but perhaps more importantly, reflects the total lack of infrastructure necessary for the industry to flourish. The intent of the proposed legislation does address this aspect of the overall development. On specific points of the bill, section 41.17092, paragraph C, the proposed 20-year term of the initial agreement includes review and evaluation of the performance at 5-year intervals. It seems appropriate, however, this section might be extended to include language that requires annual reporting of certain achievements in addition to the periodic review. Such reporting procedures would include, but not be limited to, volume harvested, acres planted, thinned, etc., road construction accomplishments, and so on. Each 5 years, these annual progress reports could be compiled and analyzed as a measure of performance and compliance with the management objectives. Paragraph D. It seems appropriate that the Forest Practices Act, recently revised but not yet promulgated, would apply to the land designated under the agreement. Part of the monitoring of the performance of the concessionaire would include habitat protection measures provided for by statute, regulation, and BMP in the Forest Practices Act. This portion of the monitoring would be conducted continuously, not at 5-year intervals. Paragraph F. The basis for annual harvest limitations or restrictions must be carefully considered. The method for establishing harvest levels must be sensitive to the financial scheme the concessionaire develops in terms of amortization and recovery of investment. This section might include language that allows for stepped or progressive levels of harvest that are linked to a progressive schedule of manufacturing capacity installation. Increasing manufacturing capacity over time to achieve a design capacity may allow the operator and the state the flexibility needed during a startup phase. The bill before us also addresses transportation plans in paragraph G. The area transportation plans referred to in this section must be coordinated well in advance of operations and in all cases reviewed from a regional standpoint to assess compatibility with regional transportation plans. This process would identify opportunities for timber haul road construction to also service other resource development while minimizing overall impact. Section I, which is in paragraph I, any forest management proposal must attempt to balance the needs of various sized operators already established and present opportunities for new entrants. Additionally, the mix of operators and businesses, including the concessionaire, must not be placed in a do-or-die position when competing for available timber. This legislation should work toward encouraging a mix of harvesting and manufacturing entities that are compatible to the degree possible, capable of operating independently. That would be intended to take out any spikes in various markets that could eliminate from time to time various facets of the forest products industry. As a final point, it should be noted that timber inventory data for South Central and Interior Alaska is in most cases outdated. I feel certain that thorough and comprehensive inventory work in areas contemplated for stewardship agreements is needed, and that it will add greatly to the probability of success of this approach to management of forest lands in the state. Those, sir, are the highlights.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? If not, what we'll probably do is, do you have anything else to add, Mr. Engel?
I would like to comment on the few remarks that Mr. Loshi made.
Please, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
If I may. The comments about value added are particularly important, I think, for everyone to consider. In the industry in Southeast over the last several years, we've seen a tremendous amount of investment in updating plants and expanding product lines to achieve the values associated with value-added products, and the concept that has been paying off. The 2x4 syndrome is something certainly that regional economies can fall into. But again, we've seen a transition in the Southeast timber industry away from primary manufactured materials, or roughly manufactured, to finished products, and again to expanded product lines. Limitations here on, meaning in Southeast, on total timber availability will be the restraining factor on getting past what's been referred to as the 2x4 syndrome. The limitations of the resource really are the only constraints in expanding into a variety of products.
Thank you very much. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume that the department supports the legislation.
The department supports putting timber out in front of operators and potential operators. A forest management agreement is but one tool of many that the DNR can use to provide timber to an industry. And if forest management agreements appear to be the most, the easiest way, perhaps, or the most beneficial, then fine. The other sales programs that DNR has, if they could get them in onto a higher plane, so to speak, would probably accomplish the same goals.
And a follow-up question. I'm always interested and concerned about, you know, the end markets, make certain that there has been, has your Commerce and Economic Development, has Commerce and Economic Development analyzed, say, the market potentials for the value-added products that could be developed, you know, in that area?
Not on specific products. There's too broad a variety of products to be, to really analyze efficiently. in more general terms, world hardwood supplies are the sorts of things that we would look at to give us an indication of whether the industry or contemplated proposals really have a chance of success. You've heard, I'm sure, lately stories about the hardwood supply in South America, forest devastation, and all this good stuff. That is having an effect on world hardwood supplies. The changes in policies in Indonesia, the Micronesia area that has been the second largest producer of hardwoods, have affected world supplies dramatically. From now till the year 2020, according to NFPA, hardwood demand is expected to increase.
Thank you very much. At this time, I would like to go on to Don Dick, right?
Yeah.
Bob Dick, Director of Forestry.
Actually, compared to some of the things I've been called Don, it's not too bad.
I can relate to a few of
those. I'm Bob Dick. I'm State Forester, State of Alaska. I work in Juneau and the Willoughby Building. First of all, I would like to share with you a little bit of my background, because I feel as though some people in the Massey area look upon me, because I have opposed FMAs, as being somebody who is not for development of the timber resource. I was born into a forestry family. My father was a forester. I worked in the woods as soon as my mom had let me. I've worked in logging, I've worked in forestry, I've worked in shipping, sawmill, you name it, I've done it. One of the reasons I'm here today is that I see a tremendous opportunity to build in Alaska a solid forest products industry, and I think in most cases, Don and I would agree on the end product. I think we disagree on how we get there. One of the things that you should have before you, or Johanna, you can get out, is a white paper that I wrote that takes less an advocacy point of view and attempts to talk about the differences in land management options. I'm not going to go through it today, but I think it will give you, I hope, a fairly dispassionate view of just what is out there. What is the debate about forest management agreements? Why are they controversial? I raise the question of whether or not they'll work in Alaska, but frankly, I don't answer it, because it's not an answer that is easily provided. I think the bottom line is that given the commitment to do the job, that forest management agreements could work. State management could work. There are some other factors we may talk about on how we get there. I would like to spend just a moment covering some points on the bill. I have a bill analysis which I'll leave with Johanna, but there are three points that I would like to take out of this that I would like to discuss. The first is on page 2 of the bill, lines 22 and 23, that discusses the allowable cut. Rather than the language that is there, which reads the commissioner may not determine the allowable cut in a forest stewardship agreement solely by the even flow method, I would suggest this language: the commissioner will determine annual allowable harvest based on professionally accepted standards. I go on to say annual allowable harvest annually may vary up to a maximum of 25% above or below the annual harvest level. That's an important distinction in the bill. It says that the harvest may, in any one year, may exceed by 5 times the annual allowable cut. I'm not sure as a responsible forest manager that I can go along with that. Going down to the same area, lines 24 to 29, there's a section of language here that I find confusing, but I think it might be designed to allow the commissioner to pursue an extraordinary harvest. I have offered alternative language that says this: the commissioner may permit extraordinary harvest levels in response to or anticipation of disasters such as fire, flood, disease, or insect infestation. What that would allow would be that for the commissioner to exceed the annual cut or exceed 25% above the annual cut in any one year if a disaster were to occur or were to be coming down the road. On page 3, lines 25 to 28, the bill says that all lands will be open. That is a laudable goal, but in the responsible management of forest lands, there may be situations where you want to close lands for reasons of fire, for reasons of fish and wildlife management, whatever. I think that section needs to be looked at. I don't have other words for that right now, but it's something that I do think is a loaded gun, particularly when and because.
Page and line numbers again, please, on that.
Okay, page 3, lines 25 to 28, bottom of the page, section J. It says the Forest Stewardship Agreement shall permit public use of the state land involving agreement except. And I see that in terms of Division of Forestry being a land manager as being a loaded mine for us if for some reason we should close the lands. Okay. A few personal comments. I am on record as being unenthused about forest management agreements from day one. I have done a fair amount of background work looking into forest management agreements. And I would have to say that in certain areas they have worked. In Canada, Alberta specifically, there have been forest management agreements in place since 1954 that have worked rather well. I've talked to a number of both government and industry managers who say the concept is very good. But in every case, each person I've talked to, both industry and government, in the United States and Canada, they said that the public opposition in Canada is becoming ferocious. And the implication is that the public, at least in Canada, is saying, we're not sure. We like the concept of forest management agreements. I also got the message very clearly that the managers were saying forest management agreements work well when the government-industry relationship works well enough for it to work. I think there is a very serious question raised about whether or not it can work in Alaska. My analysis is this. In a government-constituency relationship where the constituency is willing to say, government, do it for us, that forest management probably can work. If you have a constituency, on the other hand, that wants to be directly involved in government, wants to have a direct say about what happens, particularly on land, I think that there's a potential for a large problem. And I think that you're looking for problems on both sides of the fence, both government and the industry that has to work with it. I know there are many people who disagree with my position of not favoring FMAs. And the department, as long as you have asked, or you will ask, the Department of Natural Resources does have a position that does not favor FMAs at this time. For better or worse, I am responsible for that decision. They took that position at my urging. And I would urge you to take a very serious look at FMAs, and again, our position is that they are not in the best interest of Alaska. Absent FMAs, it needs to be said that we can't maintain the status quo. Many of the things that Mr. Loshi said are absolutely correct. The overage stands, the bug kills, the tremendous resource waiting to be used. That is correct. I think that the state, if it is going to have a viable forest industry, must take the responsibility of doing something with those lands, of providing the management of those lands to do something with them. If that can't happen, maybe FMAs are the way to go. I personally don't think they are. I think there's a better way, but they certainly are one way of getting a forest industry going. I guess I would liken FMAs, the question about FMAs versus state management, to this old fairy tale of the tortoise and the hare. The tortoise doing it the way I would like to do it, slow, careful, by the numbers, involving a lot of people. The hare being the people who want to jump from step A to step M immediately. The hare wins in the fairy tale, and I think it wins in this one. I think jumping from A to M is going to do nothing but get all of us in more trouble. I think we would have another Matsu disaster on our hands if we tried to do that.
The tortoise won.
The tortoise won. And I think the tortoise will win in this case.
You said the hare.
Did I? I blew my analogy. But I think it needs to be done carefully, it needs to be done right, and it needs to be done.
The point was that the hare started off fast, right?
Yeah. You know what I was trying to say. That's what happens when I try to go philosophical. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Navarro.
How much additional resources would your department need in order to become an active forest management to, you know, to get some of the Matsu and the timber in the, on the Kenai Peninsula and other areas. To develop a plan to...
It's interesting you should ask that question. Representative Menard introduced a proposal yesterday to put the Division of Forestry in the business of taking a long-range look at doing exactly that. I can't tell you, I can tell you it will take more resources than we have today to do it. It is certainly going to take, in the beginning, probably several million dollars per year to put us in the business of managing our forests. I want to tell you that there's going to pay off. There would be no point in investing that kind of money if there was not a payoff to the state as a state government and to the people of the state. I would not suggest investing that money if we couldn't do that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't advocate it either if we couldn't get a return on it. I think we probably can. But there are a lot of people in this state, myself included, who don't feel like we're putting enough money into resource development and management. But the problem is, at least currently, is that we're under a lot of pressure from constituencies from all over the state to cut the budget. And they don't say, well, in some cases they say change your priorities, but generally the comments that I hear are cut the budget, not diversify the economy, not put more money into resource development, cut the budget, don't raise any new taxes, just cut the bureaucracy. And at the same time, they want us to provide a number of services that either we're not providing adequately or we're not providing at all. And so there's a conflict in those, you know, those two approaches. That first of all, they want us to provide better state services in one area. On the other hand, they don't want to raise any taxes and they don't want the state bureaucracy to grow. So
I know, I'm aware of that, and that's when I go home those nights and glad I'm state forester and not a politician. you know, your point is very legitimate, and all I can say is that the sooner we start investing in forest management, the sooner we will have the return on investment.
Is the plan that you're developing going to address, and I don't know even if you're starting to develop it, but is it going to address how much it costs to do the active management and then how much the potential return to the state would be, of course?
Yes.
And when do you expect to have that?
I would expect to have a package for the legislature in 1990.
By next
session.
Okay.
Well, one of the things we talked about in when we went through the proposal that I proposed that the DNR subcommittee budget is the fact that statewide we're generating roughly, it varies a little bit, but I think, and Bob, correct me if I'm off on this, around $300,000 for stumpage fees. And I think, you know, I'm appalled. We need to generate more revenues off that because those are program receipts revenues that we can put back into reforestation and management. It gets to be a continual cycle. The point we're at now is that we have to put dollars in up front, which are hard dollars, you know, to get the return on. It's difficult to squeeze that out in our budget, but we. If we can hold it, we were able to hold the contractual services.
Yes. Our state management is going to require initial investment. There's no cheap way out of it. There's no cost way out of it.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I see House Bill number 205, this FMA plan, as sort of a statement of frustration. I mean, everybody knows we got this fantastic dying resource out there not going to any good use. And it has been out there for years, and the state has known it, and the Forest Service has known it, and everybody else has known it, and I think this is a little deficient, quite frankly, the way it's written at the present time, in that I don't believe that it does provide for adequate input, for example, protection of habitat. You know, I'm really concerned about the survival of the fish that spawn up in some of those rivers and creeks and backwater bays and areas like that. I'd want to see more information concerning the effect that it might have on game and moose and etc. We've heard from some people at any rate that that's pretty well protected, but I think we need to know a lot more than that. But what we need to do is we need to all sort of agree that this needs to be done and figure out somebody needs to do sort of a fast track grassroots type of a schematic that says, here's the product, here's the market, you know, here's what it's going to take, just sort of a skeleton of getting it out. And that's what I think this tried to do, was to try to leap over tall buildings and say, you know, but it's too shallow and it's too skeletal as I see it. But that doesn't mean that it's bad or that we can't use it and carry, you know, build onto it. What I'd like to see is I'd like to see the governor direct this division and Fish and Game and ADEC and some of the others to get together and take a look at something like this. And if they don't like the FMA concept, to come up with one that is better and lay it out, put a timetable on the thing, and if it takes money, you know, it isn't going to take a whole lot of money to get the experts together and generally kind of decide what kind of money it's going to take in order to develop a finite plan, and then from that come back to us. I want to see this timber developed up there, Mr. Chairman. I really believe that we saw up there and we heard, and you know, we need jobs, and if this isn't the approach, and maybe the forestry plan all together, maybe it's a combination of something in between. But I'd like to see a consensus that we're going to go ahead and we're going to develop a plan that will protect the habitat, protect the environment, you know, make money on the whole project there, and provide the adequate oversight for the department and the various state agencies, and yet encourage private investment, you know, by giving them something to hang their hat on a long-term basis. Nobody's going to put money into this thing unless they feel like they're going to get money out.
I agree with Representative Hudson. I want to see a timber industry in my district, and I want to develop value-added jobs. I just don't want them cut and shipped away in that business. And you know, that's why we want to work with this legislation. Or if the department comes up with something different, I want to have an industry. And there may be more than one way to skin the cat, and this may be a tool that we can use. One of the things with this, if we look at the fiscal notes, that if we look at a fiscal note of 204 from Fish and Game, your fiscal note is not in yet, but I understand it's about 206. So we got 410,000 fiscal note on this one bill in this economy where we're at. And the way Representative Sharp was in the mode in the DNR budget, I mean, it was just 410,000. I don't know where in the hell we're going to get the money.
Let me just kind of follow on what I think we should do as a minimum from this committee is to petition the governor to pursue this down to the point where we really know, at least, you know, within a reasonable period of time, let's say by next session at any rate, over the interim, if that's what it's going to take, and really come up with a good plan. Let us know what kind of support they might need in order to develop that, because I think there's something here. I just think that we're out of frustration, not knowing exactly how to go about it.
Thank you. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too feel that, after 30 years of statehood and we have $300,000 worth of revenue from stumpage fees from state land, and I realize we didn't do much to begin with because we didn't have any land, we've been gradually accumulating, but we've got to do something. I look at this approach as introducing a scheme where people are willing to put some risk capital in their time and their efforts and maybe lead the way and do it in small enough scale to at least see if it works. We don't have a very good track record statewide of doing that as far as forestry. I know you're new here and I've told you that before,
right.
So I'm not picking on
you. You're not George told me that.
But we do have pretty miserable record as far as developing this, and I'm fortunate in the Kanawha Valley we do have an industry there, and the state is managing fairly well some of the forests there. We have a couple sawmills up and down the road, so
we're doing great in the Tongass.
But that, yeah,
I thought that.
I too would like to see a plan come forward, and I'm glad to hear that we'll probably have one by this time next year. But as you realize, more or less stated, it's hard to justify a $400,000 expenditure on a $300,000 income, even on long-term projection at this stage of the game. So, but we got to start somewhere. So.
What I would like to do at this time is, since the time is getting away, I would like to hear from Frank Rue, Director of Habitat, and then we'll have a few few minutes for questions, and I'd like to knock it off about 5:15, 5:20.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Rue. Members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Frank Rue. I'm Director of the Habitat Division. I've sent you all a letter explaining our position on the bill. Basically, our feeling is that the forest management agreement concept would have a negative effect on our ability to protect, preserve, maintain, and enhance the fish and wildlife resources on state land. These resources are extremely valuable to a lot of people. They're worth many millions of dollars. We can support timber harvest, though. Obviously, we have supported this. But we can't support a bill that would administratively designate timber harvest as the primary use on lands that have many uses.
Tone it down over there a little bit. We only need a few caucuses going on here at a time. This one here first.
I mean, I think we feel that the tools are there. We need in the markets, the tools that the timber sale program can work. In the Susitna Valley, we're going through a public planning process. We're going to figure out how it can be made to work there. And still maintain the other values that the public believes are extremely important. And that gets me to a really critical point here. These are public lands, public resources, public trees, public moose, fish. To us, those ought to be managed in a very open public way, with the public participating in the decisions about how they should be done, how they should be managed. We feel that this concept would turn that around and basically put public lands under the management control of a private industry with a particular interest in mind. Most all of the lands that have commercial trees on them have a land use plan in place. This is set down, area plan, Tanana, whatever. And most of those plans say commercial forest lands have many uses, of which timber harvest is one. We need to maintain that balance. And I think the only way to maintain that balance is to have, as I say, this public process establish how we go ahead with timber harvest in these various areas. We also don't think that the cost burden would be shifted that significantly if you go into this kind of a program. It's going to be expensive to monitor a concessionaire out there. And so I don't think that some of the cost savings that people would hope for would be realized without significant risk to the other public resources. Basically, I can keep it short. It's a simple concept that concerns us, and that is that we don't want these multiple-use public lands that are valued for so many other uses, along with timber harvest, managed by an individual interest. It would be a little bit like, I'm not sure the best analogy, but it would be like having all the salmon managed by one gear group and the other gear groups coming in and sort of saying, well, we'd like some of those too. Or Prince William Sound managed by the oil company. It's fun to pick on the other right. One interest, it's a valuable interest, but there are many others out there. And we feel on those public lands, there should be public management of the resources. That's where we come down. It's not that we're against timber harvest. We would support that once you've gone through the public process to come up with how it can be done, where it can be done,
yeah,
and still protect these other values.
Well, Frank, that takes too long. That's the problem.
Yeah, I agree with you on multi-use, but I also think that you can't have simultaneous multi-use of the land if you're going to have timber harvesting particular span. I don't think you can guarantee you're going to have everyone multi-use of that piece of land at the time that timber's going to be harvested.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I agree, but I think the way the multiple use is implemented by a public land manager with public input may be different than the private focus. For instance, we're working very hard with the Department of Natural Resources in the Susitna Valley to come up with a management plan up there that'll allow timber harvest, but we'll do it in a way so that when you, know, when you design your clear cuts, you do it in a way that leaves moose habitat. It can be done. We're fairly confident that we could think about it, and we gave a long presentation the other day to the committee here about our concerns and how we've seen timber harvest work to help moose, but it's something you need to care about, think about, and do as a public land manager. So, yes, you're right, but it's the way that those individual uses are placed on the land can either provide greater or lesser benefits to other values, and we want to make sure that there are greater values to other.
They did make a very good presentation to us in resources last week, in the fact that on where there was clear cuts, where they left some mature strips and stuff, and some access corridors where game can get down to existing rivers and where game can get out of the wind and have snow shelter and still be able to wander. So I thought it was very good. And they gave us some examples of some bad forest practices that we have going on in southeast here, that some of them were on private lands and some were not even up in the valley. Some of the things where we cut birch off and stuff, we didn't scarify it, we didn't properly prepare it after we logged it, and it came back in with the spruce or evergreen.
Yeah, and actually we did it ourselves on the moose range. Fish and Game had an experimental cut, and we didn't scarify it enough and got the grass back instead of, you know, birch or whatever. So we've done it to ourselves, but it's a real concern.
Representative Clinton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Am I to understand, Frank, that you are working with the Division of Forestry to try to find out if what can be done and how it can be co-managed for the interest of, say, habitat and other uses?
Yes, Representative Hudson, we've done it in the Tenenbaum Valley State Forest. We worked hard with them. I think came up with a good program there for a combination of timber harvest and public use, fish and wildlife values. And now we're working with them in the Susitna Valley to come up with a detailed program for where you're going to put roads, how we're going to cut, how we're going to cut how much, how we're going to protect moose habitat and fish, while we go ahead with a timber program up there. And you know, we would advocate the timber sale as a mechanism to implement it once everyone and the public has had a shot at that that plan. We think we can achieve the benefits that way.
When is that due to be completed? May.
Thank you, Bob.
I just like hearing the dates. You know, I knew it was right in there, but I just wanted to hear it because every once in a while things slip. Any further questions? Do you have anything further?
No, thank you. We appreciate the update.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Don, you want a shot back there?
Yeah.
I saw you getting a little anxious over there. Come on. One more shot. Since you flew down today, we'll give you your money for it.
Okay. All $333.
Yeah, right.
Okay, the thing is, I've been in Alaska since before statehood, 1946, and 30 years have gone by since statehood. This happens to be our 30th anniversary, I think. Hasn't been nothing done yet. Did all kinds of studies, all kinds of research, 84 full detailed studies of the Susitna Valley, and our
Mr. Drew here would like to do another one, right?
We're doing another. Why don't you use one of the 84 you already did?
We're doing a management plan. He is doing the management plan. He's going to figure out how it's going to work.
Okay, the other thing is that even from what I've heard in the timber sales that they're dreaming up are not 1% adequate of what needs to be done. And in the Susitna Valley, there's a recreation problem there. And I don't like to say what other people have done, but I can't say anything about what Alaska's done because Alaska's done nothing in this department. We have to look at what they've done in Canada or what they've done in the Scandinavian countries or what they're doing in West Germany to find the answer of what to do, not what we've done here. And the information that Mr. Rue just come up with indicates to me that it's going to be more small sales. I don't hear anything that's going to support a $300 million pulp mill that's necessary to process our already diseased wood. I don't see anything that's going to support a $55 million plywood plant that's going to produce grade A quality plywood for the world market. I don't see anything that's going to support the long-term Weasel wood plant that we're going to put in. the Matsu loggers, incidentally, not me. I'm not going to do anything except help them. But I don't see anything to support these things. If they aren't done first, forget all the other projects. If we can't bring in the industry to do the job, the little bell saw rig that's running in the Tanana or in the Sioux City Valley sure as hell ain't going to do it. I mean, they think big time, a million feet in 10 years, you know, and that isn't going to accomplish anything. And the only solution to get the necessary industry to do the necessary job is through some sort of an FMA. And just how it's done, I don't know. The bill, House Bill 205, has got to have some holes in it. It was written by laymen, it was written by scientists, it was written by engineers, and no bureaucrats had a hand in it.
It'll be different. By
it'll, be different. it'll be different. There's no question in my mind that there's a lot of holes in it. But even the question that... Bill came up with is was where's the protection for the small logger? Well, it's in there, and that 20% of it will be set aside for others, which is the locals and so on. Parks and recreation are one of the biggest factors in the value-added product of the work that Weyerhaeuser does in their private forest. And the work that they're doing in the FMAs over at Grand Prairie. One of the big factors. Moose habitat. They're claiming one of their big problems over there now is they got so many bear they don't know what to do with them. There's never been bear there before. They don't know why they're coming. But they're coming because of the development. And they're putting people out on the land that was hitherto absolutely inaccessible. And this too applies all the way from the Tanana River to the Yukon and north, down the mouth of the Yukon below Holy Cross. These are thousands of miles that the Forest Service can't even get a look at. And how much of a budget would it take? I'd say about $5 billion, and the Forest Service could probably do something about it.
$5 billion?
Billion. If we use the product to pay for and expand the system, we can afford it. If we pay for the Forest Service to go in and do it, as Mr. Dick agrees, and Mr. Dick and I got a lot in common. I hope that we can always be friends. But
thanks, Don.
But anyhow, this is the evil of the thing is that we're not like the Oregon or Idaho. We're like Oregon and Washington and Idaho and California. Throw in Montana. That's what we're talking about. The totally covered area. And the state could never, ever come up with a big enough budget to get to it. And our forest industry, 300,000, big deal. You know, that's almost comical.
When I found out, or when we that information was presented to me, 300,000 on a state thing, and we got 400,000 on a fiscal note on this bill alone.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to generate. Representative Navarro.
Yeah, I was just going to respond to. $5 billion amount. I don't know what the number is either, but in any event, whether we do it through an FMA or through an active forest management program, it's my intent that it's going to be paid for by the resource.
My intent.
And so I just question whether the industry or whoever is developing it under forest management will have the same types of public policy concerns, the broad perspective of public policy concerns that an FMA person who is doing the FMA would have. Certainly they would have an interest as far as what it means to them in their industry, but as far as the broader public policy interests, I'm not sure that they'd have that same.
Well, the whole thing is under the scrutiny of Fish and Wildlife for that part of it. But Fish and Wildlife, if they could work with an FMA, would work if the commissioners work together, and that, of course, that takes the governor coming down and saying, you guys do it. You know, that's the only way they're going to do it. Everybody has their own little idiosyncrasies and their own little dreams and their own little ideas, but stream enhancement. The state will never be able to pay for it. Never. The aquaculture that needs to be done throughout the state, they'll never be able to pay for it. Here's the funds to pay for those things. Here's the funds to take care of our wild game management, to get the forest cleaned up to where the darn things can survive. You know, we're losing all down the line. We're losing our wildlife, we're losing our forests, and we're certainly losing our industry. That should be tremendous. And the figure that I come up with, a possible industry of $6 billion a year, that's exactly what it can be developed in, and the Department of Forestry figures, or not, I don't know the Department of Forestry figures, but David Orr can confirm it. He's a state forester.
How long do you think it would take us to develop that?
10 years. Could be done in 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is Bob, isn't it?
Quite a day.
Yeah, it's been quite a day.
I've always wanted to do something,
you know,
to get remembered.
Let me say, we're going to remember you.
Yeah.
We will never know what your name is. You know, this is really kind of an interesting thing, and I'm trying to get the what I've heard so far and the perspectives here. You know, typically speaking, the things that the state really energizes to are specific proposals like Matsui, whatever it is, up in Hatcher Pass, or developing Wishbone Hill, or we found oil in Prudhoe Bay, or we've got gold somewhere, or Nome or Dredge or something. I mean, there's always an end product that some market-oriented company has got lots of money, wants to invest in, and comes to us and says, you know, we can develop that, and here's what we need to do it, and here's how good it'll be for you. And back when I was with the Department of Administration, periodically we'd call for a statement of interest. Essentially, it would go out and say, we're looking for statements of interest from people who might be willing to or interested in investing into a timber products development program in the state of Alaska. It seems to me to be a chicken and an egg situation. We're asking the departments to go out and develop a big old plan without really having an identified market yet. We know that we know about what it is, but we haven't had a large Japanese firm or a Finlander or anybody else come in and say, we got big bucks right back here, we want that timber, and here's what we have to have in order to invest our money in there. And then the money could we would agree to put the money in their hands if it looked like that they could meet the criteria of all of the other public interests, you know, the protection of the habitat and the private interests and the multiple use and those kind of things, and we might have something. But a statement of interest, lacking a statement of interest, is hard for us to throw a lot of bucks into the agencies, asking for them to go out and develop a plan that may never be developed or may never, you know, find an end market. So I'm a market-oriented individual. I think I mentioned that several times. And I suspect that maybe if we went around the other direction and tried to encourage someone, say, a statement of interest, or at least to solicit and say, State of Alaska is seriously considering developing a macro, you know, finished wood products industry in the state, and just a general bit of information wouldn't cost a whole lot of money, and then try to feed it back in the other direction. And then maybe we'd have enough interest to where the governor and all the rest of us would throw up, you know, $2 or $3 million if that's what it took in order to develop it. We're ready to put $9 million into a road to pull Wishbone Hill coal out.
We have
$300 million worth of capital investment located and identified from one company.
But we have.
Well, they've tried. They've been here and tried, and nobody will talk to them.
No, I'm telling you,
Mr. Chairman, I'm telling you, what we have to have is similar to what happened on Hatcher Pass. Somebody's got to come in and say, I want that timber. You know, our people here have got to say, it's for sale, you know, and they'll say, well, here's what we have to have. We have to have 15 years, and we have to have so much commitment of so many board feet, and these guys say, that's fine, but here's the criteria you have to operate under, and you got to either operate it through the Forest Service people there, and then we got to put the money into their management scenario in order to properly handle it. Then the industry, or the sale of the product, pays for all of the added public expenses in order to monitor, you know, to manage the whole thing,
and then we win because we get money back into the general fund, and you win because you get all the jobs up there. And then you won't try to move the capital. I win.
Mr. Dick.
No, not the names, not the names.
Right. I'd like to respond to Representative Hudson because I think he brings up a good point. And on this one, Don and I are absolutely in agreement. The reason, there are people out there who are interested in Alaska. There are manufacturers that are from the States, Finland, Japan, Korea, who are interested in our products. The problem we have is that we have not got a stable land base, a stable program to present them. An FMA would be one way to present that stable land base to say the land's going to be here. What's happening is that the land is here today, gone tomorrow. And these people are saying, we cannot invest $50 million or $100 million or whatever if in that kind of a climate. We have to find a way to present a stable land base and a suitable climate to bring those people in here to say, yeah, there is some guarantee that if I invest here, that my investment will return not only tomorrow, but 20 years, 30 years from now. And whether or not it's an FMA or state management is, I think, a moot point. Somehow we have to present the economic climate, the certainty of the resource that's going to be there. Don, would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And if Frank? I might add...
But that's not a state forest.
If I might add, I think I would agree with that point. I think the Susitna Valley situation is a good example of how not to develop a good climate. I think what we're doing now, where we're figuring out what needs to be dedicated to timber and what needs to be dedicated to these other values and how it should be done, once you've established that through a good public process where the public has bought off on it, then I think industry can come in and be fairly certain about their future and where they can go and where they can't go. I think if you do that, I mean, that part of what Bob Vick was saying about Canada is the Canadians are now getting upset that the public's views aren't necessarily listened to in these FMA situations. I think industry would be in an unstable situation if you hadn't established those public uses and how you're going to manage those public lands before you gave a commitment.
Is that, and I'm not familiar with the Congress issue down here hardly at all, but it, isn't that one of the things that's evolving with the long-term sales that they've had here, is that the public is demanding that they have more involvement in what goes on? Is that some effect?
I hate to evolve into the time. There was a commitment made in the 50s, and what's happened without the same understanding as today or public opinions as today, and I think what's happened is public opinion has changed on it.
Yeah. Well, I think I want to go ahead and end it, but one of the things we've been talking about, Scandinavians and Europeans and everything else, what are we going to do for Alaskans? We have some Alaskans want some jobs and some industries, and I know Klukwan has made interests in here and stuff, and we want those people to be involved. We don't necessarily all have to go to Scandinavia or Europe or wherever to find...
No, my only reference to West Germany and Scandinavian places like this is that they have some workforce, and they're doing it. And we're not.
Well, we might.
It's the guidelines that we should look at to where here's a state that has just oil, and there's Finland as an example that has just forest. 80% of their total economy comes right out of their forest. Everybody in Finland's in the forest business one way or the other, and we got much, much more than Finland.
Of course, that's pretty interesting. I think Representative Millar made the proposal there that he thinks the Resource Committee maybe ought to go over there this summer and just kind of check out this operation here.
Wouldn't be a bad move. But on the situation like Mr. Rue brings out, that we got to have all this great public process because there might be a fish swim up that river someday, or somebody might want to go fishing in that river someday. That's fine. We already gave him the Six Rivers Bill. Take it. If you got another river, take it. You got one down below there, come up, take it. If a spring pops up and starts sprouting fish, take it. But let us have the rest of it. Let us have the rest of it to develop the forest industry on and get our people to work and get away from the single base economy.
With that, resources return.